You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Cynthia Ozick's latest novel, Foreign Bodies, reimagines Henry James' novel, The Ambassadors, as the story of Bee Nightingale, a divorced New York City school teacher. She travels to Paris at the behest of her estranged brother to rescue a nephew she's never met from the clutches of an older woman. It's published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and I'm very pleased that it brings Ms. Ozick back to our show today. Hi.
Hi.
It's no secret that you've been an admirer of Henry James for a very long time. Didn't you write your master's thesis on him?
I did. The late novels of Henry James, which included The Golden Bough, Wings of the Dove, and unfinished novels, two unfinished novels, The Ivory Tower. Nobody's ever heard of those.
Yeah. Well, are they things we should be reading, The Ivory Tower?
Not necessarily, no.
Is this the first time you've used something by him as a direct model for a work of your own?
Yes, yes. But it's an indirect model. It's an indirect model because the plot... it's probably available if you, one can read it in the ancient Etruscan cuneiform or in folk tales. After all, the wayward youth who goes away from home to find something better. So,
well, writers have always borrowed plots from earlier works, Greek mythology, Shakespeare, Jane Austen, when you have Bridget Jones's Diary and films like that. Are you surprised that more of them haven't looked to James for inspiration?
Well, I think many have. Combe Toybean, the master, and their, David Lodge. I think he's a kind of treasure trove that writers dig into.
James considered The Ambassadors his best novel. Do you agree with him on that?
No. I think that some of the short stories are sublime, extraordinary, and deeply original, even in their plots. And I'm thinking of The Madonna of the Future, The Beast in the Jungle. The short stories are never rated above the novels, and maybe they shouldn't be because the level of ambition, I mean, at least the succinctness keeps them obviously smaller. But the short stories are exquisite.
Brilliant. Foreign Bodies has been described as a mirror image or a photographic negative, by a publisher, of the James plot. Do you see it that way?
Well, it's an interesting and rather enigmatic description, and I think it is accurate. Not so much in relation to the plot, which is a kind of mechanical element, but in relation to the theme, James's famous great theme of the international situation, the international theme, he called it, between Europe and America.
Well, to some degree, he has these American characters, no matter how wealthy, they're a little rough around the edges, and then they go to Europe and they become acculturated. Well, Europe, you know, had high culture, but it also had a lot of people who are rough around the edges, even at that time.
Yes. Well, 1903, when The Ambassadors was written, James was very much in the position of regarding America as raw, provincial, uncultivated, naive. All these things were cliches at that time about America versus sophisticated, super civilized Europe.
So he had an idealized view of European culture?
No, not particularly idealized. It was rather, in some ways, ahistorical, though yet in spite of that, he didn't deal with the history of Europe and all its dark side. But he certainly valued the culture, the art, the museum, the aristocracy, Eton, Harrow, thatched cottages, as he wrote in an essay on Hawthorne, Norman castles, palaces. He valued that, and he saw it as everything that we here didn't have. And it was for him a kind of lyrical idol. And maybe that could be a pun, that idol. I-D-O-L and I-D-Y-L-L.
But he also seemed to see it as seductive and it's sometimes even a little dangerous for Americans, perhaps because we weren't prepared for all the complications.
Yes, and that's certainly true in the ambassadors of his young man, Chad. And it's also true of my young man, Julian. But he goes into a Europe that is, I'll use that phrase, though it isn't mine, the photographic negative of the sophisticated, highly civilized, highly cultivated Europe. He goes into Europe in 1952, and he goes in, as many young people did then, with a kind of vision of the generation before and the lost generation, as Gertrude Stein said. And he falls into post-war Europe.
Because now Paris is a place where Americans are going still to be part of the high culture, but and study with Léger or especially American jazz musicians were leaving to escape racism in this country. Mm-hmm. But Paris is also a place where people are coming from other parts of Europe, people who have survived the Holocaust, for example.
Displaced persons, DPs. And in 1952, the great Western cities, including Paris of Europe, are teeming with such refugees, struggling to get away from this continent, which one of my characters calls Nineveh, as in the story of Jonah.
So in your novel, the Americans in Paris are ambitious, cheerful, literary tourists. The other arrivals are people who have just survived.
The ghosts of the Marais, yes.
And looking to go somewhere else, often to America, to the place that the Americans want to get away from.
Precisely, particularly in 1952, which was a watershed year of refugees coming here.
My guest is Cynthia Ozick, whose latest book is a novel called Foreign Bodies, published by Harcourt. Harcourt Brace.
Houghton Mifflin Harcourt.
I'm still back in the old days of publishing. You've chosen to use a woman as your protagonist here. Why? James had a male.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, I wasn't worrying about a one-to-one relationship to the original plot, and I felt I could take as many liberties as I needed because, again, I'm repeating this, because it was not the mechanism of the plot I cared about so much as this great theme of Europe versus America and how they have changed positions.
Your protagonist, Beatrice Nightingale, is a divorced high school teacher living on the Upper West Side, and she's changed her last name from Nachtigall to Nightingale, presumably because it's easier for her students to pronounce, but perhaps also because a lot of people changed their Jewish-sounding names to something a bit more American as part of the assimilation process.
Yes, but her brother, who's made it as a manufacturer mogul, kept his name.
Even though he's married into a WASP family.
Yes.
He's made a fortune in the aerospace industry.
Yes. About which I know nothing.
So, but this is a matter of different kinds of assimilation.
I would say that Marvin can be characterized by something else rather than mere assimilation. It's a kind of wishing to be completely transformed. And one of the things that I threw in there, not so gratuitously, is that he marries a woman whose unmarried name is Margaret Breckenridge. And I don't know if that name, Breckenridge, has some...
Well, Gore Vidal.
No, that wasn't the reference I had in mind. And I don't think it was the reference that he had in mind. Namely, the State Department had a man named Breckinridge who was instrumental in keeping Jews out at a time of tremendous need for haven.
You go to the Holocaust Museum and you see all of that documented, in fact. Mm. Both Marvin and Bea cringe at the thought of their immigrant grandparents and later their parents' hardware store. Is this something that second-generation children tend to do, or is it something that's particularly a Jewish-American phenomenon?
Well, I'm the daughter of a pharmacy, and I rather relished my childhood in the pharmacy. So I don't know if one can really generalize, but certainly it's true of Marvin, who wanted to get away from those pots and pans as fast as he possibly could, and in a sense ended up in the same place. If you can regard the aeronautic industry as elevated pots and pans.
I'm not going to go to all the details of what happens when she goes to Europe, but what happens when Marvin's daughter goes as well. The talk about the relationship between Julian and this Romanian woman who he's with, who lost her husband and child in the Holocaust, because that's all part of the fun of, if we can call it fun, of reading this novel. But there is another plot that I would like to address a little bit, because it's about making art. B also makes her way to California to visit both her ex-husband, Leo, who's a successful composer of film scores, although not the serious composer you'd hope to be, and Margaret's Marvin's wife, Margaret, who's been confined in a posh asylum. By the end, do you think that she has... she's changed by her travels, or has she lived up to the missions that she accomplished, any of the missions she set out to achieve?
Well, what she accomplished was wreaking havoc on everybody that she was concerned with or related to. And when we first meet her, she's 19, she's naive, she wants to make her mark in the world, and then discovers that she can make her mark, she thinks, through her young husband, who is a very, very ambitious and besotted young composer. But she wreaks havoc wherever she goes and becomes more independent, but also becomes, I'm afraid, a corrupted version of the young woman who had aspirations.
Well, her aspirations were, to some degree, to live through other people.
Vicarious aspirations.
But are you also saying that people who want to do good are almost bound to make a mess of things?
Well, that's an interesting thesis. And in this,
that's kind of what happens in this book.
Certainly, it happens in this book that do-gooders become do-batters.
Is it just because that's the way of the world, or is this just a plot of your book here?
I would not want to say it's the way of the world, but it can happen, and it happens here. And there may be a tendency on the part of do-gooders, because to do good, you need to meddle. Mm. And once you begin to meddle, you enter a perilous atmosphere.
Well, the title of the James book is The Ambassadors, which where people are sent as ambassadors for others, and they are ambassadors are meddlers too, aren't they?
Oh, I think they're official meddlers. They're meant to be.
Well, they can be
meddlers.
Diplomats and spies, and and these people are both that on a very personal level here.
Right, right. She sets out to be an ambassador unwillingly. She ends up as a spy and a deceiver. I worry, though, about people who are concerned with books that don't result in uplift. And my retort to that is, don't read King Lear.
Are you working on another novel?
Not yet. Not yet.
Stories. Some essays?
Essay. I'm in the middle of an essay at this moment, right.
Cynthia Ozick's latest novel is Foreign Bodies, and it is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you.